Hello everybody and welcome to another episode of the IAAF Inside Athletics Podcast. I'm Ben Harlow and I'm joined again by Katie Smith.
Hey.
She's back.
Can't get rid of me.
Seems to be a recurring thing, you just disappear for a few months and then just
I'm a woman of mystery. Who knows where I'm working? Actually, no, that's
You have been working on the Women's World Cup though.
I have, yeah. I've been in France, I was in France for all of June actually, following... Mm-hmm. I changed sports, transfer news, which was actually such a fantastic experience, and the whole tournament was amazing. It's what I really love is when you feel you're part of something that's not just the sport, but it's something, a growing movement, and I think in women's football, that's such a big thing. It's really nice to now come back to my normal athletics coverage and realise what parity we do actually see in athletics as well. So
completely,
lots of things to take from it.
Yeah, there's been a lot going on. I mean, obviously, we've had the Monaco and London Diamond League. Mm. I was in Monaco, you were in London, so this works really well. Let's talk Monaco first, then, since that came first.
Can I just mention Safwan Hassan?
Yeah, my God. She's mental. She is absolutely mental.
It was the fact that she ran that first 1,500 metres, was it? Or no, sorry, was it her first 800 metres, where I was listening to the commentary, obviously I wasn't there, and the commentators totally wrote her off and said, you know, she's run 2:08, you know, there's no way that's, you know, she can't bring it down. And just suddenly they had to just eat their words. I mean, it was such a brilliant run, and the fact she didn't even realise she was kind of on track for it.
Yeah, she is brilliant. And all the women behind her set all sorts of records, national records also. It was just always in Monaco that... The atmosphere is always electric. Mm. You can't really describe it. And there's just a million things going on at once at any one time. I think other highlights were the men's pole vault with Piotr Lisek when he cleared 6:02.
And what it meant to him.
Oh my God,
just love that atmosphere. We just get reminded every time about this kind of beautiful relationship amongst all the male pole vaulters and the female as well.
Yeah.
It's such a community, isn't it?
I think it was interesting as well. It was actually the highest Thiago Braz has jumped since he won his Olympic gold. Like he's kind of maybe went off the boil the last few years, but he jumped 5:92, I think, which is... And he had a good attempt at 6 metres and two as well, so I don't know.
Exactly. If the conditions are good in Doha...
Oh my God, it's
we could have five guys over 6 metres in that final.
Uh-huh. It's going to be exciting. Oh. Super, super exciting.
And we're going to mention Sam Kendricks in a bit, but you know, in case you think we're not remembering what he's done in the last couple of days.
Yeah.
That's also a thing.
Yeah, the men's pole, the depth in just pole vault in general is really exciting at the moment. And it's just amping up every month as it ticks by close to Doha. Another guy pops over 6 metres and I don't know who's going to do it next.
It's looking easy now, isn't it?
I know, 6 metres is the new 5:80. You heard it here first. But yeah, also Sydney McLaughlin, who is this week's guest, by the way, on the IAAF podcast, her and Joanna Hayes, her coach. So I get I sat down with them just ahead of her Monaco Diamond League race, and she was in really good spirits. It was the longest time she's ever been in Europe, actually.
Wow.
And it was something like 6 days. So I think it was a bit longer, maybe. But yeah, she was really great. And then she went on to do a really fantastic race as well, 53:32, I think, which... We forget she's 19, 19 years old. And
she runs like she's a lot more mature, doesn't she? Mm. I think she paces it really well.
Yeah. Well, I just think she has much older head on her shoulders because one thing that kind of repeatedly came up is that she's kept joking that she's mentally retired or like looking forward to retiring. She's going to do Tokyo and then she's out. She'll be 20 years old and won it all. but Joanna had different ideas. She was like, absolutely not.
That is an issue for young athletes. I mean, we sort of saw it a little bit with Usain Bolt, just in terms of winning so much, becoming so huge so early on. What do you have left to win?
Yeah.
I mean, just looking to another sport, in British swimming, there's Adam Peaty. He's the world record holder in men's 50-metre breaststroke and 100 metres. And he's been talking this week at the World Championships about the fact that he wants to stay in the sport another 10 years.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And carry on dominating. And it really struck me. I thought, how many athletes would actually have the mental capacity to continue doing that?
Definitely. I mean, if you listen to the episode, the interview with Sydney, she goes on to talk about other events she'd potentially consider doing. I asked her about the heptathlon. She said, absolutely not. But have a listen. It's really good.
You'll bring her around, Ben.
I'll wear her down eventually. Also, Amos as well, yes. Nigel Amos. 1:41 he ran, and
I couldn't believe it. I had to go and check, just like check David Radish's record to see how close he was to
it. Yeah, honestly.
Unfortunately, though, he didn't finish the race in London a week later, which is sad. But yeah, in Monaco, I mean, wow.
Yeah, it's mixed feelings, but that was the it was the fastest time ever since Radish's world record, which was
2012.
Yeah, which is actually a really long time ago now.
I know, you keep thinking it's yesterday, don't you?
Yeah. But yeah, let's talk about London then. So obviously the drama of the men's eight in London, he did sadly get injured.
Yeah, and Emmanuel Carrere's kind of come off the boil a bit recently as well, hasn't he? I was sort of calling the race, well, talking about it the day before and saying, you know, like sort of pegging it as, you know, Nigel Amos running so fast, Carrere's, you know, this young Kenyan who's really was talking last year about breaking Radish's world record, and not seen much from him this season particularly.
No, I know that, I don't know whether he's had a bit of trouble with training in the lead up, but I think what we have to remember is that there is still a month and a half, 2 months until we are actually in
which
Doha.
Actually is something I'm really enjoying, because I think we've had this the whole sort of chat about, oh, how do you deal with a championships that is so late. Now it's this excitement of, well, I'm seeing some people running really amazingly. I'm going to come on to Carsten Warholm in a minute, really early on, and some people who haven't quite hit the mark yet, but you think, oh wow, is this just some really clever plot that when you get to Doha, you are going to kill it?
Yeah, that you just don't know. And some people are like championship performers. Like, so we've talked about some athletes having to double peak, like US trials and that kind of thing. But then Dina Usher-Smith, for example, has been going around saying, no, I am peaking once and that is it. I am peaking in Doha. And any of my results are just building into that.
Yeah, so, and it's given a lot of them this more sort of relaxed approach. You know, people like Dina, particularly in Britain, I think she came out and started the season so well in the 200, beating Thompson, beating everyone. And, you know, suddenly everyone was going, oh, Dina's going to win gold in Doha. Then she's kind of tapered off a little bit, or perhaps other athletes have kind of come into
started
the fore
a bit
more.
A bit,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. But she doesn't seem to mind. She's taking the pressure in her stride in London. She was obviously, you know, poster girl with all the press conferences and everything going on. She totally took it in her stride. Mm-hmm. Any questions she gets, she just goes, yeah, I'll be ready then.
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool.
I think you have to, and I think people can definitely get carried away with stuff like that, thinking she is going to win everything, because the likes of Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce returning from pregnancy.
Yeah, she is, though. Did you see, obviously, the week we're recording this marks the one, or just it's just passed,
just
actually,
past
the one year to go till Tokyo.
Yeah.
And there's some sort of statistician thing that works out sort of likelihood of medals and things like that, and they were talking about Dina Usher-Smith is apparently favourite to win gold in the women's 200 in Tokyo, and I just thought, oh, if I was her, I wouldn't want to see that.
Well, I mean, Shawna Miller-Weibo can actually. I was looking, and I think the schedule is much more doable for the 400-200 double in Tokyo than it is in Doha.
You know, I'm such a huge Shawnee fan. I would never, ever bet against Shawnee Miller-Weibo.
Yeah, she is. She is fantastic.
Back to London.
Yeah. So Shelly-Ann,
Shelly-Ann, yeah. So if we're sticking with women's sprints, Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce, I mean, what a woman. 10:78, she won the 100 metres in. She's already run 10:73 this year at the Jamaican Trials. So, you know, 10:78 is basically a jog for her, isn't it? So it's, you know, No one is near her. I mean, the American trials, again, I keep saying we're coming on to that. None of them went close to anything like that.
It's been a weird one with, like, there's been some really fantastic results, but the sprints were particularly not stereotypical.
Wow factor, were they?
I think they were 1:11:20 for the women.
I'm not totally clued up on what the conditions were like actually at the meet. So, you know, we've got to factor that
I think
in.
It was into a minus, like a fairly large headwind, like -1.7.
But watching her in London, you know, you've got to take into the fact she's older than a lot of the rest of the field.
Yeah.
She's come back from having her son, who she told me wasn't in London because they'd looked at the weather forecast a week before she flew out and decided it was too cold. So they decided to stay in Italy where she's been training. But she just had a huge smile. She seems so relaxed, so up for it. She said, you know, she has total respect for her field, that, you know, the competitors she's racing against, but at the same time she's like, I'm happy, I'm running fast, my body is fit and healthy, who's gonna stop me?
Yeah.
And right now I actually can't see who in the 100.
I think apart from Elaine, I don't, you, because Elaine did beat her at the Jamaican trials, so
And I mean, one thing to say though, Shelly-Ann, which Diamond League was it where she had the really awful race?
I think it was Stanford, and she just didn't get out. I think it was just cruised.
With everything I've said, we temper it with the fact that we have also seen her run kind of averagely as well. So maybe on her day, to me, she is just looking back in sort of 2012 form.
She's running faster than ever. Really, I'm really excited to see where she turns up at Doha. What kind of shape can she get faster, or has she got her peak right? We don't know.
Because Elaine Thompson, to me, is she's definitely becoming more consistent now.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think she's not quite looking as supreme as she has in the past.
No, maybe not so much over 200 metres anyway, but yeah.
But maybe this whole point we've just been talking about, peaking at the right time.
Yeah.
Who knows? But sticking with women's sprinting then, the women's 100 hurdles was a really interesting race.
Phenomenal.
So obviously remember, London was the week before the US trials, so actually loads of Americans weren't there because they were staying at home. But we had a couple of really good Jamaicans in the field. Danielle Williams stood out.
Yeah.
12:32 she ran. Let's just remember, world record 12.2, also set in that stadium.
Yeah.
And what I thought, there was a kind of nice parallel between what Kenny Harrison did with the world record back in 2016, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So let me just tell you the story of Danielle Williams then. She was at the Jamaican Trials a few weeks ago for the hurdles.
Mm-hmm.
False started, kicked up quite a fuss about not being allowed to race or about being disqualified from the race because of the false start. And therefore, the Jamaican authorities have said, well, you haven't got your place in Doha for the World Championships.
Mm-hmm.
So she's now come to London and run 12:32 and put down a massive statement. Obviously, the similarity I'm talking about then was when Kenny Harrison didn't make the US Rio team.
Fourth, didn't she?
Yeah.
At the US trials.
Absolutely brutal trial system, 3 past the post. She didn't make it, came to London, put a world record time down, and just went, yeah, and what?
Yeah.
And Danielle Williams was emotional, but also quite sort of level headed in. She spoke to us afterwards and just said, you know, this is all I can do.
Mm-hmm.
If my season is just going to be the Diamond League and not the World Championships, then I'm going to win the Diamond League. And I thought, that's a really cool.
You're winning
attitude.
The Diamond League right now.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, it was an incredible. And just her demeanour was just, I hadn't really seen her like that before.
Definitely, yeah, exactly.
I don't know. So yeah, that was really exciting. What were your other highlights?
For me, the big standout performance was Carsten Warholm. Again, you know, back in a stadium that means so much to him.
Yeah.
He was the surprise 2017 world title winner in the 4 hurdles.
Mm-hmm.
And in the absence of actually many of his big rivals, so Samba wasn't racing.
He was in the 400 flat, wasn't he?
He actually wasn't. He didn't start the race.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah,
okay.
So he was meant to. And it was funny, I spoke to Carsten Warholm before, on the day before the races, and said, you know, obviously, we kind of... It's building tension, the fact that these two haven't faced each other.
Yeah.
But I can sort of see why they're doing that. But I asked him who would win over the 4 flat, and he reckoned he would beat Samba over the 4 flat. So I asked him if he'd enter that as well on Sunday, but he said no. Anyway, back to the hurdle. So in the absence of kind of competition, we always know Warholm likes to just go out hard and kind of hold on for as long as possible. He ran 47.12. Mm. So it was, I read these out to him after the race. I said, you've got a national record, an area record, a meet record, a world lead. Which of those means the most to you? And he goes, he forgot club record and school record. Like, oh, right, okay.
He's just a really funny guy.
He's such a joker. But you could tell, he actually then answered and said world lead because he's never held the world lead before, which I couldn't believe.
Really?
Yeah. But it's so exciting. That is going to be one of the firework events at Doha. They're running so quick. Ry Benjamin is running so quick.
Yeah,
Samba's running quick. Yeah. Carsten's almost gone sub 47. Only 2 men have ever done that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my mind is being blown just even thinking about it.
I know. I think it's really shaping up to be.
I think a lot of people had written him off, hadn't they, when Samba and Benjamin came out and put down such fast times. And Warholm's just been chipping away. He's getting faster and faster.
There was something about him off, like, in the home straight in London. He just wasn't slowing down.
He looked so strong, didn't he?
Yeah, he looked really good. I think also, if you don't follow him on Twitter, you really, really should. He is just brilliant on Twitter. Throwing some light shade at Carl Lewis. If you
it's a lot of in-jokes as well, which I feel you've got to kind of work into.
But. Yeah, just follow Carsten and you'll get it. But yeah, particularly the Carl Lewis stuff is really fun. So, So US trials, obviously. Results have kind of been a bit all over the place. Christian Coleman did cement himself.
$9.99
He's on his way to Doha.
Lyles.
So at the time of recording, so we're recording this on the Sunday night, but obviously we're GMT, so the US tryout, the final day is actually yet to happen.
Right.
So it'll be happening later this evening whilst we're sleeping. So we will miss the final evening, but in terms of what's already happened, obviously we've touched on Sam Kendricks, who cleared 6.06, which these are mammoth heights.
Yeah.
Like, they're crazy. And then Deanna Price also did really well in the women's hammer. She broke the American record.
Oh, yeah, 67?
No, 78. 70,
sorry, I did see that.
Brain fart. she did 78 metres, which is huge. Yeah. I think it was something like fourth place through 75 metres.
Wow.
And I'm not going to Doha. It's just, it's brutal, the US trial system. There's nothing else like it in terms of depth.
Yeah.
And who else did really well? Fred Curley in the men's 400 metres.
Yes.
Which was a bit of a surprise, I think. Yeah. I think people were like, obviously Michael Norman has been pretty invincible all year, but now Fred Curley has kind of thrown his hat into the ring.
I think that's brilliant. Mm. Maybe Michael Norman, I don't want to say he's got complacent, but, you know, hadn't necessarily thought there were any national challenges to him. That's really cool. I'm go on Fred Curley. I'm pleased about that.
Yeah, it's nice. And I think it was also the first race since, it was like the second race ever where two guys have run sub 43.8. So that's a Statman John stat, you can tell, can't you?
Yeah.
It was a really, really good race, really good result. And then obviously we just talked about the men's 400 meter hurdles, but Rye Benjamin ran really, really well again, 47.23, I think. Which these times would win so many Olympic games.
I love this.
So
it's just becoming normal.
Yeah, like them similarly to the men's pole vault. It's just they're really setting.
Shout out to seeing Alison Felix back on the track as well.
But
so
when we were talking
love.
About Shelley Ann and like mums kind of or new mums returning to the track and Nia Ali, who was the world silver medalist in Rio, she said something like, I can't remember her interview after the race was, I'm not surprised that I have run this fast. Becoming a mother makes you so much stronger. Mm. And
did you see Shelley Ann actually tweeted about Nia Ali?
Really?
Later today and said, she said she was one of the first mums I spoke to when I realised I was pregnant and she gave me so much love and support. So, I was kind of returning that to her, which I thought was really good.
Yeah, no, it's lovely.
And you really get the sense that these mums are kind of standing together, particularly, you know, what Alison Felix is kind of had to put up with in terms of sponsors and everything. It's, you know, it's a really important topic to be getting out there, I think, and making people aware of.
Definitely. And she's qualified for the relay, which is where she is at her best.
Absolutely.
excited to see another Alison Felix relay leg. It's just nice to see some of these faces returning again and competing and doing well. I think in terms of other stuff, we've got Sydney is meant to be running this evening. Noah is also meant to be running this evening.
I'm trying to think any major shocks. We haven't really had that kind of.
Not really.
How is that person not?
I think
through,
what's been interesting is seeing like some of the NCAA athletes. So Sha'Carri Richardson, she finished last, I think, in the final, and then I don't think she actually qualified, made it out of the heats of the 200 meters. So
is that cliche of it's so difficult to transition from youth or, you know, college level to professional.
It's a completely different ball game.
And to do it so quickly like she did as well.
And also, like, you forget that they are battling from basically February,
exactly.
March, all the way through non-stop. So it's no surprise that most of them are pretty tired. But yeah, I think that was maybe a bit of a shock. Obviously, a lot of in the US, they won a lot of world titles back in 2017. Mm-hmm. So they have an automatic wild card entry.
Of course, yeah.
So the likes of Sam Kendricks.
Yeah.
There was like Tori Bowie as well, for example. She actually did the long jump. And
I saw that, yeah.
Because Brittany Reese won it, who also won in 2017, that meant Tori Bowie came fourth. But because obviously Brittany had a wild card, Tori is now going in the long jump.
That's great.
So she'll do 100 metres and long jump as well. So that's going to be interesting to see how she does, because she's kind of been out of the She's not. I don't know if she's raced many 100 metres this season. Certainly not on the Diamond League circuit. So yeah,
she's kind of faded into a kind of background position at the moment. But hopefully, you know, there's a big master plan there.
Yeah, I mean, there's still like I said multiple times, we have like a month and a half, 2 months until the actual world champ. So she's got a lot of time to get into form. And if she's jumping nearly 680 in the long jump, then I'd say she's doing okay. but yeah, I think men's shot put was also fantastic, yes, as always. Three men over 22 metres, Darrell Hill, Joe Kovacs, and Ryan Krauser just continues his dominance.
Yeah.
I
don't think anyone can touch him.
No, Darlan.
This season.
Darlan Romani, the Brazilian guy, who won. He won in Stanford.
Yes, but I mean, for Doha, I'm putting the medal around Krause's neck.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think.
Do you not think?
Tom Walsh has a lot of.
Oh yeah, but I just there's something about the way he's kind of.
I don't know. I think that's gonna be a cracker come Doha as well. It's gonna be a really, really exciting.
We've got to lay our cards down now, Ben.
I'd go with Darlan, the Brazilian.
Okay, no, I like this. I think this is great. We'll come back to this episode when you lose.
Okay, right. So now I think obviously Sydney is running tonight, so fingers crossed, because she is our featured guest on this episode. I hope that she qualifies, otherwise it's gonna be a bit of a disaster. But yeah, Sydney was as I said before, her and her coach Joanna Hayes, Olympic champion over the 100 metre hurdles. They were both kind enough to sit down with me at the Monaco Diamond League. Everybody had just had lunch. We were just chatting in the hotel. So I would say there was maybe some interesting background sounds from athletes smiling and waving at Sydney as they were passing by. But yeah, they were both really brilliant. And I hope you guys enjoy the chat. Is that a new rumour around the Diamond League circuit?
Sydney
and
kids.
The children.
No, that would have happened.
Just eye rolling constantly. Well,
she's adopting them. I'm going to give them to her as a gift.
Are you just the overqualified babysitter then?
No, I don't even qualify as a babysitter.
I don't know. She might lose
me. I would be a terrible babysitter.
Yeah. I don't know how that would go.
Yeah. Okay, well, both of you, welcome to the Adelaide podcast. Thank you again for just taking part and doing it. So we were saying earlier, you guys have been in Europe now. How are you finding things?
I mean, I'm good. I think, you know, for me, it's been a while since I've been over here, especially for this long of a period. So I think last time I was in Europe, well, actually, I was out of the country. I was in Beijing in 2015 with the IAAF doing some stuff, some ambassador stuff. So it wasn't bad, but I was also by myself, just hanging out, you know. So for me, it's okay. This is getting long. I have my kids here, so I'm ready to go home. This is Sid's first time being over here this long. The longest you've been in Europe was 4 days for Oslo, right? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, she loves it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not bad. It's like bittersweet, you know, like it's nice being over here, but then like you also have to focus on the running part and kind of the adjusting to the time and everything. But other than that, it's been cool.
Rewinding a little bit, Joanna, you're used to life on the circuit because obviously you were a pro. How has the circuit changed from then to now?
It's been a while. I mean, yeah, I think things that have changed for me, like, you know, we have like phones, like something as simple as the cell phones. We can just come over here and you just use your phone. We were on pay phones using like calling cards, and at Zurich we'd stand in the line downstairs in the lobby because it was one pay phone. So we would just, you know, you see somebody, oh, they're putting their card in again, they're adding minutes, oh, like, come on, I gotta get on the phone, you know. Or again, or the social media, you can see what's going on in the world. We had no idea what people ran in races until someone says it, you know, pops up somewhere. It's never. So I think the really biggest difference for me is just the access to the world on the phones. We were kind of like, when you're gone, you're gone. I mean, the food's the same. The setup is the same. You know, the rooms, all that is the same. It's really, for me, it's the main thing is that athletes are athletes. You know, you're going to see great times here or there. You're going to see people perform or not perform and go home and get ready. So yeah, for me it's just the access to the rest of the world that we now have with these phones.
I mean, you both have a really interesting relationship now. So you are both coach and athlete, and Joanna, you are the Olympic champion over 100 meter hurdles, but you did actually start off as a 400 meter hurdler like Sydney. you actually won the NCAAs at 400 meter hurdles.
Right.
Did you specialize? Would you say just in 400 meter hurdles, or did you just do everything?
I did both. I started running hurdles, and I just tried them both and did them both. And I always loved the 100 hurdles more, but my coach was like, "You got to run them both." And just sometimes, because of the schedule back when I ran in NCAAs and stuff, the 400 hurdles came first, and I was always so tired when it came to the 100 hurdles. And now it's different. It's easier to double there. But, yeah, it just turned out that the 400 hurdles that kind of made the team in 99 Worlds and, you know, Pan Ams and all that stuff. So I decided in 2004, maybe a month before the trials, that I just wanted to do one. I didn't want to do both anymore. And it kind of just worked out really well for me.
Really well.
Yeah. I was like, but I was strong because I had the 400 hurdle training background.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was helpful in the transition. But, yeah. I started with both.
You were really successful even over 400 meter hurdles. You made several world championship teams and that kind of thing. How did you find your first few experiences of doing a world champs?
99 was, I made some mistakes when I was young. I thought I could cruise in the first round. Like, I'm just gonna jog this in. I got nipped at the line. So it was learning experiences, I think. For me, it was learning experiences, like, cause I was young and I was trying things. And my coach was telling me, you got to do certain things, and I didn't do them. Then I got sick in 03, I was really, really sick. But, I think just a lot of different experiences. And for me, that's being a coach is good because I can remember all those things that I did wrong or right, and I can utilize them in coaching in my experiences with Sid or with any other athlete to say, hey, this will happen if you do this or this kind of thing. You know, and I just kind of thinking ahead to how did I get sick that time, or how did I do this, or why did I make that choice, or injuries, that kind of thing. So that those good and bad experiences helped me. I fell in 2005. Mm-hmm. That helps me to know, okay, we got to make sure we're doing this or that. So all my experiences with the Worlds, none of them were really that great. I think she's going to be different.
Yeah.
I think, well, and she's going into it in a different setup than me.
Mm-hmm.
Like her this year, she's run a lot faster than I ran, and her ranking is much higher. Like, her chances are better than mine were.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's a different approach because everyone's watching her. Back then, no one was watching me going into the World Championships.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different approach there for her and me.
How do you handle that approach, Sydney? Obviously your coach, Joanna, has had these experiences. Do you confide in her and get advice from her when it comes to all that kind of thing?
To a certain extent, yeah. I think a lot of it for me right now is kind of just getting adjusted to
mm-hmm.
being a pro, and kind of, you know, there's a lot of things they don't tell you before you jump into all of it. So I think I'm learning all of that right now, and kind of just taking it day by day and seeing, you know. I think that's the importance of this year, is kind of just like becoming adjusted to everything. It is a world championship year, but I think like my main focus is kind of just like, you know, waking up to everything and seeing what it's like before next year. So.
And obviously, we are in a world championship year right now, and it's kind of late in the season.
Yeah,
yeah, you're smiling, so it's been difficult kind of working out the approach. Have you found that?
I don't, you know, what Sydney was saying, for this year, I'm not really too concerned about that, because for her, this is her first year as a pro. Like, we're in a situation where everything that we do that she does is new. It's trial and error
mm-hmm.
experiences. So we can say, okay, well, taking notes, okay, next year we won't do that. Or next year we got to do this. This was great. Or we should have done, you know. So for us, this trip, we'll go back and say, remember we did that? Did we like it? What do we want to change? So again, it's learning. We went to Shanghai. Then we decided, to Oslo, we'll leave a day later. And it helped. So we're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, the training for this year is different. But I think, again, this is her first year. So for her, it is late, because she was in college and high school, right?
Yeah.
But as a pro, she doesn't know anything different than this year. Now,
mm-hmm.
next year, it will be very different because it will be July for the Olympics. So our trials this year are in July.
Yeah.
And next year, they're in June. So there will be a different approach, and then she will see a difference.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, like she said, for her, it really is a learning year, is a year to get your feet wet. And see and then go back in, you know, after end of the season, October, we'll say, hey, okay, now let's
mm-hmm.
start again.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there's no pressure on her, like, not from us at all. Like, as a coach, as her shoe company, as her manager, everyone, it's just, hey, so let's go have some fun. Let's see what we do. If we come out on top, awesome. If we don't, we learn.
I think that's the thing that people often forget with you, because you kind of have been a name for so long now, maybe since, I don't know, 2015, when you were 15 years old, right? How has that been for you? Do you feel like you've been around a while, or do you still feel...
I feel like I'm retiring. I'm ready now. But, I mean, it's a hard place, you know, because you've worked so hard to become a pro, and now you're here, and then, you know, you see all the pros who have accomplished everything, and it's like, I have so far to go, but I also kind of look back at what I've already done, you know? So it's like, it's a bittersweet kind of thing. So I think that's why this year is so important, and kind of just adjusting to get to the next stage and, you know, starting that journey of trying to be successful as a pro.
I mean, you did kind of find the sport really young, and you were successful really young. Have you always been a sporty kid growing up?
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm not all into all the other girly stuff. I'd rather be competing and beating people and stuff. Especially my siblings, so.
Yeah, your brother Taylor, he was at the awards in 2017, right? And he's also a really good athlete as well. He medaled at under 20s in the past. I guess his influence also get you into track and field?
Yeah, especially in high school. I remember I was in 8th grade and he was, I think, a sophomore, and he had gone... was it under 20s? I can't remember.
I think it was under 20.
He went to somewhere, yeah, he had...
He went to Poland.
Yes, and he came home with all the USA stuff, and I was like... Mom, I want that. Like, what is he like, you know? And it kind of, he motivated me to want to be successful, so, yeah.
Cool. Okay, well, I also heard apparently you can juggle as well. When did that come about?
That came about in 5th grade. My 5th grade teacher kind of taught everybody how to juggle as part of his class. He had, like, a club and has continued ever since, so I started one in high school, in my school, and just kind of do it for fun.
And then you unicycle as well.
Yeah.
So if this doesn't work out, then the circus is a definite.
You know,
possibility.
I had a lot of backup plans. Yeah.
And what other backup plans have you got going?
A lot. I don't know. It doesn't matter what they are.
Don't want to reveal yet.
Just know I have them.
They're there. Keep the cards close to your chest.
Absolutely.
Oh my God.
So with 2015 going to Cali, Colombia, right? How was that for you? Because obviously Colombia is a completely different experience to the US and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that was my first kind of like wake up as to how international competition works. You know, I think it was successful because, you know, I won, but I think I learned a lot about just kind of myself as an athlete and, you know, what comes with, you know, competing internationally. And I think I was in the Normatec boots way too long, and I was getting massages like every single day. And you know, it was kind of like the foundation of what I like and don't like as an athlete.
Yeah. I mean, did you find that useful going into 2016? So obviously 2016 was a big year for you as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of looked at it as going into 2016, my idea was, you know, I'm going to go and I'm going to run, but there's no pressure on me. You know, I'm 16 years old, I'm going to see what happens.
Yeah.
And then somehow something happened. and I was still shook, like, to this day. But I think it was a good learning experience just getting to go to Rio and experience how everything works. So that, you know, not that I'm that much older, but, like, when the next one comes around, I'll be a little bit more prepared.
I mean, that was, like, a huge shock for, I mean, the whole world, a 16-year-old qualifying. I don't think that had been done for a really, really long time.
Yeah.
I mean, most athletes that maybe would do a World Youth, maybe a World Junior, maybe then do a Continental Champs, and then maybe Olympic Games, whereas you literally went 0-60 like that.
Yeah.
Was that intimidating for you, or did it not faze you because you were so young?
It was a wake-up call, I think. You know, because you're used to training, competing with people who are your age, and then you go and now you're with these grown-ups, you know, and it's real-life competition, and this is their job. So it taught me a lot about the sport and just how everything works, and definitely made me a little bit mentally tougher because of all of it. So.
And how did you find the atmosphere of the Olympic Games? Did you take it all in, or were you just too...
Oh, my, I don't even remember much of it, honestly. I just remember so much going on. And in my head, I'm thinking, like, I have to run, I'm 16, you know, like, there was just so much happening. But I think afterwards, when I was done, that's kind of when I started to like enjoy the moments. So.
And Joanna, for you, was Athens your first Games?
Yes.
Yeah, completely like polar opposite.
Much older.
Experience.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Because you kind of, you had the experience of, you knew what a global championships felt like as a senior and that kind of thing, and going in there, I guess you were a lot more mentally prepared.
Oh yeah, like I think it was funny because there was a, the year 2000, I was fourth at the trials, and fourth in the 400 hurdles and fifth in the 100 hurdles, I did the double, and it was just like, it was devastating. I couldn't believe it. It was like one of those things where like you're in complete shock because I was like, I'm on the team. It's not, that wasn't for me. I was going to make the team. Didn't happen. So by the time 2004 came around, I had already given myself an ultimatum, like, you know, make the team, you're done with track and field. Like, we're not going to be one of those people just doing this to do it. Like, you're going to have to go do something. So a reporter had asked me, I was with Gail Devers and Melissa Morrison, both already Olympians, both medalists and things like that in the world. So they asked me, well, you know, you're the youngest one, it's your first Olympics, are you going over there just to get the experience and take it all in? And I was like, no, like, I'm 27 years, I was like, no, I'm going to win, just like them. Like, kind of stupid question is that? But in my mind, I was like, that's dumb. But it makes sense, though, that you ask that. It's the first team, they don't know. And I'm like, no, I don't see myself going to experience it, I see myself going to win. Mm-hmm. Whereas her, at 16, there was that, not that I have to win this. Like, that was where you can experience it. There is no pressure on you. There is, go out there. Now, the next one and the one after and after and after.
Whoa. She...
Cindy says she's already mentally retired.
Yeah, Cindy is crazy.
I talk about it all the time.
I don't even listen. Like, I tune her out and I'm like, okay, so we're on to this. But by the time she gets to the next one, you know, she'll be like, okay, I've been there. Mm-hmm. So I'm going there now with a purpose.
Yeah.
To go over there and, you know, one, make a final and then try to get on the podium and win. You know, you set your goals up. But yeah, I think she is very blessed because of that. A lot of people don't get that experience to go do that. So it's good for her that she got to say, okay, next time when I go, oh, this is how this goes already.
Yeah.
She doesn't have to learn how things go. Mm-hmm. She'll know that. And so that's a really good thing.
And for you in Athens, I read somewhere that you actually sent an email to a friend of yours before the race predicting what time you were going to run.
They had given us, the USOC had given us these little phones that you could send little messages on around. And so the whole USA team had them. My friend Doc Patton, every day he would send me a message in the morning because I left the village and I went to a boat. My coach put us on this little boat, a Sports Illustrated boat by the Queen Mary. And so he would text me and be like, you know, you ready? And I just text back, damn right. And then he texted me the last one, you ready? And I was like, damn right. And then I put 12.37. And he was like, when he text back, Olympic champ. And that was it. And then I ran 12.37 and Olympic champ. So that was kind of cool because it was just, I knew the Olympic record. Normally, I don't go for records and we don't talk about it. Like, even with her, I don't tell her we're going to try to break the record here. If they come, they come, right?
Yeah.
Because you break records when you compete and go for the win. If you win, you make a record. If you don't win, you ain't breaking the record, even if, you know, you break it. The first person in front of you is the record holder. So I don't do a lot of that. But at that moment, I just felt I was ready. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, I'm going to break the record. So I thought, 12:38, I'll come over at 12:37. Let's just call it, you know, I should have said like 12:29, but you can't sell yourself short, right?
Yeah.
But no, that happened. It was really cool. Mm-hmm. And I always make fun of Alan Johnson because Doc showed the message to Alan Johnson. And Alan was like, wow, she looks ready, but I don't know if she's going to run 12:37. So he had to eat his words. And I tell him that often. So it was pretty funny, though. Yeah.
And how did like your experience in Athens change you as an athlete?
You know, I think it gave me, when I was 12, I said I wanted to win the Olympics. I saw Flojo and I was like, I'd run a little bit, but I saw Flojo and I was like, I'm going to be an Olympic champion. I made this vow and set my goals and my dreams up for it. So being there and doing it, I was like, oh, I did it. Like, it was, I don't know, it was just really a surreal experience. And just being involved in the Olympics, the movement of the Olympics and the peacefulness of it and bringing the world together. For me, that's what the Olympics is about, not just about medals and teams. It's just about the entire world coming together, united for a couple of weeks, whether it's on TV watching, whether you're there, whether you're competing, whether it's your kid or family member. The whole world is united in one common thing. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's like, for me, that's the biggest thing of it. And so being involved in that and being able to share that in Athens, where it all started, was, for me, that was just the best part.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Yeah. So obviously after the Olympics, Sydney, 2017 was also a really big year for you. You were setting records all over the place, and then going into 2018 as well. You were then a collegiate first year, and then you broke the under 20 world record. Did you expect it? It was 52.75. Did you expect to run that at all?
Yeah. I think the training last year definitely set me up for that. I knew, you know, after my first race, because I had PR'd, I mean, 53.6. I knew after that race, like, I was able to run really fast that year. It was just a matter of when. So, I think I knew that day I was going to run 52. It's kind of like you wake up and you're like, today's the day, you know, mm-hmm. something crazy is going to happen. And I don't even remember the race. I remember through the first 200, my mind was completely blank. And then I realized that about, you know, halfway through, I was like, oh, I'm on the eighth hurdle right now. This is like, what is going on? And I just remember trying to get over the last two, stay as low as I could, and just like push all the way home. And then I didn't look at the clock until I was right before the line. And then I looked at the clock. And it was a crazy race.
Is that something she gets in trouble for? When she's racing,
looking at the clock. Yeah, she did it last week, and I mean, I think when you look at the clock, it takes away from the momentum going forward.
Yeah.
Right. So I look at different things with her, or any athlete you would, but I look at the 10th hurdle to the finish line. How fast is that touchdown? How fast is that time? And you, even if I didn't know she was looking at the clock, I know that she wasn't running fast mm-hmm. because you can't. If you're doing this, you're not doing this, and if you're not, usually if you're being pushed though. You don't have time to look at the clock. So if she was being pushed, she wouldn't have looked over because she's going to look forward. Mm-hmm. So I know when she's pushed, she won't do it.
Yeah.
And it's a habit that she'll break. even when she's not pushed, she won't look. because I'll say, okay, yeah, see, this was too slow. We look at the clock, so now, you know, we got to work on that. But yeah, I think, but it, you know, again, it's she's young, and there's the things that you do, and as she gets older, she won't do them. And the more competitive races she's in, she's going to, that's just going to automatically stop happening, and she's going to be looking directly past the finish line. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
You had a really strong training group there as well. You were with Omar McLeod and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. How did you find that experience?
It taught me a lot. I think I didn't train with a lot of them specifically. My training group consisted of three people. One was a collegiate, and one was another pro. So I think kind of just being in an environment where everyone was really serious about their work kind of forced me to be very serious about my work. Mm-hmm. And it pushed me to do really great things last year, but I think, you know, it was just very intense all the time. And I think as great as it was and as much as I learned about myself and about my event, I think it was almost draining how intense it was. When you have a bunch of professional athletes at the highest level in one area, it's hard to focus on yourself, and it's hard to, you know, really just be happy because that you feel like you're constantly having to push yourself to the highest level. Mm-hmm. So I learned a lot from them, and, you know, things that they've been through, and especially having them at the races sometimes, you know, kind of just talking me through certain things. And, you know, there's a lot of things I took from that that I'm going to carry with me. So
I mean, it's difficult, obviously, if you are around elite athletes, but you are still a collegiate athlete, and the collegiate circuit is so demanding mm-hmm. on your body. I guess it was only leading down one path, really, with that.
Yeah, I ran a lot of races. That's the biggest difference, I think, between pro and college, is how many races you're running every week versus, you know, you're racing, like, twice a month. So, for me, I think oftentimes I compare now to last year, but I really can't because it's just two completely different schedules and mm-hmm. Training types. So.
Okay, and you did have the possibility to go to the under 20 world champs mm-hmm. that year. What was the decision for you to decide to skip that?
I think after nationals last year, we kind of just decided to shut it down. Mm-hmm. I think it had been such a long year, and I had accomplished everything I wanted to from it. There wasn't a need to go any further. You know, I was just ready to be done. It was such a long year.
Retired.
Ran a lot of races, so I was just ready for like a vacation. And mm-hmm. Just getting ready, you know, to go pro and do all that stuff. So.
What did you do to switch off that summer? Did you go away?
I did. We went to London.
My best friend
and I. We went to Wimbledon and, yeah, had a birthday party, all that stuff.
Nice. Cool. So then, obviously, fast forward a few months, you guys, had you met each other before the coaching relationship started?
Yeah. We met when I was coaching at USC.
Mm-hmm.
She came on a recruiting trip. She took two recruiting trips only. One to USC and one to Kentucky.
Right.
So, you know, I'm still a little bitter. No. You know, I think it's funny with recruiting. I've learned so much being a college coach that you meet people, and some of them come to you and some of them don't. They don't. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get them all. It's impossible, right?
Yeah.
So you meet them, and sometimes you have a bond or connection with some that you carry through even when if they go to a different school, and you see them, you watch them. When she decided not to come to USC, I was disappointed, right? But I couldn't be like, my life is all, you know, it is what it is, right? I really wanted her to come, but I think things work out the way they're supposed to. And I watched her all year, and I wanted her to do well. Mm-hmm. I was always, you know, when I would see her, we started a few meets and talked to her a little bit. You got to be careful. You can't really talk to the collegiate athletes at different schools. It's weird, you know,
yeah,
with all these rules.
Yeah.
But I did get to see her a lot. So, I mean, I thought we connected pretty good at SC. We had some fun. So we had met and kept in touch a little bit, like I said, when I would see her on the collegiate circuit.
So, Sydney, for you, obviously your coaching group kind of disbanded. Mm-hmm. And then for you, was this an obvious choice on where to go next, or did it take thinking time?
Yeah, I think, you know, even during last year, I want to say it was at Nationals, outdoor Nationals, and I was just talking with my roommates and stuff about what was going to happen next year because there were rumors of my coach leaving and everything. So we were just discussing, like, what our plans were all together. And I remember thinking, you know, like, I want to go to California. You know, I knew that. I was like, I want to be in the warm weather. I want to be... After last year, it was just so exhausting. I was like, you know, even if I go to California, and you know, I may not run super amazingly fast, but, you know, like, I'll be in an environment where I'm comfortable, and, you know, it can be me telling my story, and I'll be happy. You know, I actually spoke it into existence, moved to California, and, you know, now she's my coach, and I think it was kind of me just talking to myself about, you know, what needed to happen, and then it happened, so.
Who made the first move when it came to approaching the relationship with Coach Athlete?
Well, it came from her agent.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think he was asking me what would I consider it, and I talked to her dad,
mm-hmm.
and then I talked to her. So it was kind of just a few steps in between, you know, like, okay, Will West, like, what do you think? And I was like, oh, yeah, I'd be interested, and then I talked to her dad, and then I ended up having to quit my job, and so because I was thinking I could do both, and it just didn't work out. So I was like, so it was a lot. I think for both of us, I think took a risk, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we did. So now we're here, and I mean, she's running well,
yeah.
Feeling good, and learning a lot. And I think again, it goes back to the plan for this year was always, let's see what we can do.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see how you feel. Let's work it out, and let's get to know each other as coach athlete as well,
mm-hmm.
Styles, and then see what you know we do and don't like about it, and go from there and make it work. Because you know we're here,
yeah,
we're in it now.
Exactly.
So she got to get it together, get her life together, and stop trying to retire, and we're good.
Retired as a teenager, that could be a good autobiography.
It's not going to be an autobiography. Well, she's going to be 20 in a few months, so it's not going to be a thing. So she can't retire before her birthday. So, I mean, she physically can, but she won't.
Not on your watch, anyway.
Not right.
So obviously, you guys have been together now for quite a few months, and training seemingly is going really well. There is a different approach this year with the World Champs being so much later,
right,
and that kind of thing. Just in general, do you guys like set out a goal for this year? Was there something that you both had in mind, or was it just enjoy life?
I wouldn't say enjoy life. I don't know if that's the goal. I would say the goal is kind of just to get adjusted.
Yeah.
I've taken personally all goals away, I think, because it's such a strange year, and I mean, I'm learning each and every day that there's so much that comes along with all of this.
Yeah.
I think for me, really, it's just kind of getting adjusted. Because next year is the important year. You know, this year is kind of it's important, but it's not the Olympics. So I think it's kind of just give and take, learning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. I think with her, we did talk about, okay, the plan is to set up for next year. But, I mean, obviously we're going to try to make the team.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to try to go to Worlds and do all that. But I think at the end of the day, the main goal is for Sid. We want her to enjoy life. We do.
Yeah.
Right? We want her to enjoy this experience, because I think you take someone, you put them in this environment of just constant stress, and you have to win, you have to do this, 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 and this, it drains them, and they don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. At some point, it's like, I'm doing it because I have to. We want her to enjoy her life, and want her to say, when the track meet is over, I can go and have fun and be 19 and yeah. see my friends, and I have to think about track 24/7. And I think some of us as athletes or coaches get caught up in that, and we forget to live. Mm-hmm. And if you forget to live, if you forget to breathe, then this is really worthwhile.
Yeah.
Money, medals, like if you're not happy, none of that essentially matters. Mm-hmm. Because you know they say money can't buy happiness, and medals aren't going to buy you happiness. They're going to make you smile.
Yeah.
But when you go home, when it's all over and you're by yourself, it's like
someone's going to win again.
What's the point? Right. I mean, you know. So it's more racist. So yeah. I think yes, part of it is. Okay, and then we need to find out, what is Sydney really like? What does she really enjoy? What does she really hate? You know, and some of those things she's going to, if she hates certain things, she's still going to have to do them. But I just think, yeah, this year is definitely, the goals are soft, mm-hmm. right? I think she can do great things, whether it's this year, next year, yeah. I mean, this is, we're enjoying it. She works hard. And everything is, we're taking everything into perspective.
I mean, yeah, people forget that you are just 19. I mean, I'm 23, and the idea of doing all the stuff that you're doing and have been doing for the last few years is crazy. But I think as well, obviously, you are so young to have moved from Pennsylvania to California.
I'm from Pennsylvania. Isn't it wrong, Pennsylvania?
That was New Jersey.
Yeah.
How was the adjustment going to California?
It's not that different, honestly, except for traffic. Like, I mean, warm weather, it's the same stuff.
Yeah?
It's not that bad, yeah.
And are your parents?
Mom's my roommate for now.
Before. That's cool.
She's not for long, though. I'm putting that in the interview. Not for long. Yeah.
So if she listens to this, then is that... Well, that's it, Mom.
She was there to help me set up and get everything situated, so...
Yeah.
Been very helpful in that, you know.
She's been very helpful. Yeah. She's been amazing. Yeah, it's going to be sad to see her go.
She's very organized. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's very on point, appointments. Like, she keeps Sid in order. And it's helpful for me as well. Because I don't know why I'd have to be like, Sid, where are you at? You coming to practice today? I haven't seen you in a week. No, it is very helpful to have someone help her make the transition. Mm-hmm. Because, yes, she is 19, and it is a whole new side of the country. When she went to college, she had roommates and dorms and academic support and yeah. nutritionists. People were around her. And when you in LA, that group, your team, you don't have a team of athletes. Mm-hmm. So then you are alone, right? College is different. You're not alone. So it was good that her mom was there to really get her set up and help her.
Cool.
She don't know how to pay bills. She was going to be in the dark with candles. I don't know what happened. The lights are off. Well, did you pay the bill? What bill? Did you check the mail? What mail? Where's the mailbox? No, I'm just kidding. It's not that bad. I don't know. No, but it to the point, her mom has been very helpful. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing.
She's been very helpful.
Do you find, as a coach, that obviously you are a coach, but especially with younger athletes, do you feel like you have a kind of parent relationship with them as well?
You know, I think more like a mentor. Like, I think especially with her, like, she has her mom is there, so it's good. Like, she doesn't need another parent.
Yeah.
I think in college, what I learned is that the kids that come into college have parents already, mm-hmm. and they've done a certain job. When they bring them to us, it's like they're making a transition into adulthood.
Yeah.
So you have to be there to support what their parents have already instilled in them, but to teach them more how the real world is going to respond to them or how they're going to respond to the real world. Mm-hmm. So more of like an aunt or a mentor, because that mother role is generally already filled. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have some kids call me their second mom, and I think it depends on how the athlete looks at you as well.
Okay, well, guys, I think I put a thing out on Instagram asking if anybody had any questions for you, and you got loads of responses.
Oh,
so
sure.
Just some highlights. So we can do them quick fire if you want. Okay.
Yeah, cool.
Have you ever been injured badly?
Defined badly. Yes.
Yeah?
That's the quick fire. No.
Okay, yes.
Let's keep that there.
Okay. when did you decide you wanted to be an athlete?
When I was 6.
What's your diet like in season versus off season?
You know, it's in moderation in season, and then off season, it's I'm going to gain 20 pounds.
Possible.
Where's your dream location to race at?
I want to go to Rome.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Would you ever do a heptathlon?
Nope.
Would you ever try a different event?
Nope.
Just
wait, oh, well, yes, maybe. Yeah, you... yeah, maybe long jump.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Cool. You
yeah.
So like...
400.
400.
Huh? No. Don't put that in
there. Have you leveled up your juggling skills yet?
Have I what?
Leveled up your juggling skills yet?
No, I don't have... No. No.
No, I'm okay.
Basic.
How do you prepare mentally for a race?
Oh, I cry. listen to music.
Listen to music, yeah. Cool. Okay, and finally, what's your favorite TV show right now?
Oh,
too many.
Right now. Dead to Me on
Dead
Netflix. Yeah, that's crazy.
Okay, cool. Okay, well, cool. Guys, thank you very much for doing this.
Thank
and
you.
Yeah, best of luck with the rest of the season.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very
no
much,
problem.
Ben.
Okay, sadly, that is all we have time for this month's episode of the IAAF podcast. Katie, thank you very much for
no
joining me.
No problem. I'll always talk about athletics with you. Or football.
Where can the lovely people find you on social media?
I am at @K_CroydonSmith, which is probably the least easy one to find.
And this is on Twitter.
I'm still not cool enough for Instagram. I just don't have time.
You're a busy girl, I get that. I'm @_BenHarlow on Twitter as well. As well as that, if you want to follow more of the athletics goings on around the world, you can follow the IAAF account, which is @IAAF.org. On Facebook, it's the World Athletics Club. And then on Instagram, it's IAAF_athletics. It's not the first time I've said all of those. And yeah,
so smooth.
As always, like, comment, share, rate, do all of those things. And yeah, always get in touch if you have any athletes that we'd like to, that you'd like us to track down and interview, because we can do that and make it happen. And yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed the episode, and we'll see you next time. It'll be the end of August, and we'll be heading into Diamond League final time. And then it's Doha, baby. It's exciting.
Yay!
Exciting, exciting. Right.
I'm so excited.
Cool. All right. Well, Katie, thank you very much, Gay.
No problem.
Yep. See you guys soon. Bye.
Bye.